Hello and welcome to the All Things Leadership Podcast, where we bring together accomplished experts to share their diverse perspectives, compelling stories, and insightful lessons on effective leadership and personal growth. So, whether you're a seasoned executive navigating the corporate world or an emerging leader on the rise, this podcast is your go-to resource for valuable takeaways to fuel your success along your leadership journey. I have with me a very special guest, Ditu Kasui. He's a president and CEO of Kasui and Associates LLC, the certified personal and professional coach, a national award-winning motivational speaker, and an international trainer. He's also the past national president of Urban Financial Services Coalition and currently serves as a UFSC Advisory Board president. He's also a fellow John C. Maxwell certified speaker and coach. Ditu, welcome to the All Things Leadership Podcast.
Oh, thank you so much, Fred. It's an honor to be on the podcast with you. I've been waiting for this moment to be able to connect. And you forgot to mention the other connection that we have, that we're both sons of the continent.
That's right. Let's talk about that. Nothing is off limits here. So feel free to add anything, Ditu, that I missed here as part of the introduction.
Absolutely. And I'm from the Democratic Republic of the Congo, and because I'm from there, I have a real astute, appreciation for leadership. Because my one, our country regained our independence because of great leadership. Patrice Lumumba, was fellow Congolese and saw that, what, we wanted to be more empowered at the time in 1960. We only had, 40 educated people in the whole country. It was a way of keeping us confined, but we, pushed through, found a way, and people like my mom, had that Patrice Lumumba spirit that says, you know what, we will knock down doors, break through barriers, and do what we have to do to be able to increase the quality of life or make a difference in the life of those that they care about. And that really created my story. Because my mom, came here to the United States, didn't know any English, didn't, knew very few people. She got a ticket, from my aunt, and she had to make a choice. And, that's one of the first leadership lessons, is that sometimes you have to make hard choices. She had three children at the time. She was married. And so, do I stay, here and live a traditional life in the Congo? And in the Congo, like a lot of African countries, it's a patriotic society. And so folks aren't really passionate about what women can do and can see the possibility in women. But she stepped out on faith, came here to the United States, made a choice to leave my older sister and take her two youngest kids. And consequently, I got a chance to see leadership, up front, and it has impacted my life, and and that has really informed my journey. Like, I want to be like my mom. I want to be able to take risk. I want to break down barriers. I want to be passionate about, what I do. And consequently, we're here, been over here for 40 years. She has a doctorate's degree. She was public health officer in California. She's now retired. So I know personally that leadership can make a difference in a person's life. And that's why I'm excited to be on this podcast today.
I love that, Ditu. I love the segue there, connecting that leadership from Africa, where we both are from. I'm from Ghana as well, so really not too far away from the DCR. But you talk about Patrice Lumumba, and several others come to mind. Nelson Mandela, Kwame Nkrumah, just to name a few here, but there is a lot that can be said as well when it comes to African leaders or prominent African leaders whose leadership impacted not only the continent of Africa but also the global community as well. There's a, some Th Thomas Captain Thomas Sankara was one of them, and a few others. But our mentor, my mentor, John C. Maxwell, who you happen to also belong, I mean the certification, he always says this anecdote when people ask him, are leaders born or are leaders made? And he quips by saying, of course, everyone's born, right? They're all born. But I want to throw that question to you. Are leaders born or are leaders made? And why?
Yeah, a great question. And I like that when I heard John say it, and I've used it a couple times. One thing that John says a lot is that I'll say it and then people will use it. And then the second or third time, they don't give him attribution. It becomes our own. So I have used that a lot in some of my talks. And it is important because the paradigm that, leaders are born, in some respects, it's true, right? Because we're all born, and people are born with some unique genetic talent and ability. So I was watching the Tiger Woods special. At 2 years old, this guy is putting, right? So he's developing. So he is pre-positioned with a particular type of skill. When we think about Venus and Serena Williams, right? They are extremely talented individual. Their parents had different kids, had other kids, and those kids did not become tennis stars, right? So the aspect that leaders are born is true, and some people are born with a pre position skill and ability. And then that's when I add the and, right? So for those of us that are not born with a pre-position for extraordinary leadership, talent, skills, and ability, is that we can be that we can develop it as a skill, as a muscle, and everyone needs development. So even the person that is pre-positioned with the skill and ability, they also have to train and develop the capability. So when you think about the Tiger Woods, the amount of practice, the amount of focus, the amount of tension to be able to capitalize on his talent, skills, and ability. Then you have, folks who don't have, we all know folks who may not have that unique ability, but they are hardworking. They've worked on it. I played against those. When I played high school basketball in Richmond, Virginia, we had some folks that were extremely talented, like Kendrick Warren. I mean, he went to Thomas Jefferson. Then we had this guy at Douglas Freeman. He wasn't extremely talented, but man, that guy worked, and he worked hard. He shot. He went to the gym. Used to shoot 100 jump shots. He ended up being the head coach at Henrico High School and took Henrico High School to the state championship. Not extremely talented, but he had the work ethic that helped him to be successful. So we put that in the lens of leadership. So leaders are born and, they are developed. And even if you have a pre-position, you have to develop it, take care of it, and build it. Because we know a lot of folks, and I know a lot of folks who could probably be playing in the NBA right now, who could probably be CEOs right now, who could be running their own companies right now, but because they did not develop their skill set and ability, they are underperforming and their dreams have gone unrealized.
What a powerful way, DT, to kind of break that down or to set this up. And I love the correlation to the Williams sisters and some of the NBA or the basketball players that you played with, which brings to mind, you think about, some of the legends of basketball that we know. Talk about LeBron, talk about the late Kobe Bryant, all these folks who we idolized in basketball. They put in a lot of work. I was reading something about the late Kobe Bryant that talked about how he wakes up at 4 a.m. and goes and puts in a lot of work, as good as he was, right? There's a lot of work that he puts in, which we can ascribe to the development that we have to put into leadership. Gone are the days where command and control leadership was the thing. Now, with the dynamic environment in which we work, talk about emotional intelligence, the cultural intelligence, and remote work, and how very very quickly the landscape is evolving. I think it brings to bear the importance of constant development, and we can't talk about this enough. But what are some of the challenges, D2, based on your experience that you see? Because I've worked with people, they reach a certain point, they feel like they have it all. There's really no need to, companies don't invest, because someone has reached a certain level of leadership. But the opposite is actually true, right? Investing in coaching, investing in training and all of that. What are some of the missing elements here, based on what you've seen in your profession as a leader and as a coach?
Yeah, thank you. Great question. So the number one obstacle that I see that gets in the way of leadership growth, number one is mindset. So often people come up with a fixed mindset. So if people have read that book by Carol Dweck, right there is fixed and growth mindset. And so people who have the paradigm of a fixed mindset, often they believe that leadership is about authority. And so once they have gotten a particular role, they feel like they no longer need any other type of leadership skills or ability because people are going to do what they ask them to do by nature of their position. And so we, as the John Maxwell coach, you and I know that leadership is influence. It's not authority, right? Because people will comply. But they will not give you their discretionary talent and ability if you are trying to control them. And that mindset, right? They say, you know what? I'm going to have a growth mindset. So beyond my position, I am going to keep growing and learning the different aspects of leadership so that now in my toolbox, I can use a lot of different techniques and strategies to be able to influence people in a way that's aligned with where they're trying to go and where our company and organization is trying to go, so that we are able to create a shared vision. Because when we create that environment, whoo, we unleash the talent and capability, of the individual and the organization, and then we all end up winning. So mindset will be the first one, is to really have a mindset of growth in a mindset that leadership is not authority, leadership is influence.
That's so good. How do we change this mindset? Because there are some schools of thought that believe, and this is, I am here, I'm in this position, and what I say you do, by virtue of the title that I have behind my name, this is all about me. But then I also realize, as a lifelong enthusiast myself, learning enthusiast, is that you really never get to the end of it, right? You constantly have to be in that position of learning and unlearning and challenging some of those paradigms, some of those mindsets. So it's constantly evolving, which makes this very complex, right? Because we're talking about the complexity a while ago, where some of us are stuck and following some of these theories of folks who are no longer here, are quite anecdotally, right? Maslow, Hertzberg, yeah, they have some really good principles there. But how much of an effort do we, and I think people, think about all that, like, I'm done, this is it, and this is my style, take it or leave it. I mean, this is who I am. And I've seen this in the workplace, and I'm constantly challenging myself that, at one point, if you were to ask me what sort of, leader I was, I'd have told you constantly something entirely different. Now, if you ask me, I'll tell you I'm a situational leader, because they're different situations, right? The way I lead in this particular era may not be the way I lead in that next era. And then you have the multi-generational folks in the workplace. You have those who are, see things very differently. And so one size really doesn't fit all when it comes to leadership. So how do we then get into this flexible mode as leaders, where we're, constantly evolving, constantly changing, challenging those fixed mindsets and paradigms that we may have been accustomed to, say, 5, 10 years ago?
That's a great question. And my simple answer to that is the same response, right? The same response is that it's about the growth and it's about the future. When we think about leadership, leadership is about solving problems and adding value. And if we're going to add value, then if we're going to add value, then we can't add value in the way that we have always done it in the past, or the way other people have been successful. It's one of my favorite phrases that I like, that I got from Dr. Stephen R. Covey in his book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, is that Nothing fails like success.
Hmm.
Nothing fails like success. And so I always ask people, what do you think that means? Right? And they often are close in the ballpark, but what it really means is that the strategies that we use to be successful in the past set us up for failure in the future. Why? Because we go back and think, oh, I used this strategy before, so it should help me be successful now, and not notice that there's differences in the current environment, and that those differences will lead to our success, so we can't use our same success strategy. You know, as a parent, you know, we're invited to consider we can't totally raise our kids the way we were raised. Because when we were raised, the dominant society, you know, advocated for parents. In this day and time, you know, there are more kids' rights than before, that there are more avenues to influence, you know, kids. And you can end up trying to help your kid and hurt yourself if you don't recognize how society has changed. And that's the same thing in the workplace. So people are accustomed to showing up in the workplace. Everybody needs to do, everybody has to adapt to the way that the company has done things or the CEO is telling. Well, that's not true. We're in an environment where there are more jobs than there are job seekers. So in that current environment, employees have more power, right? And they're more empowered to make choices about where they want to work and how they want to use their talent, skills, and abilities. There are more job opportunities and different types of job opportunities than there were 30, 40 years ago before the internet. People have more opportunities to leverage their talent and skills and not be held hostage by geographic location. And so with all of these options that now are available that may not even existed 30 or 40 years ago, or if they existed, they were depressed, right? Only a few people had access to. So we cannot use or simply rely on the leadership strategies of the past. We have to be present. We're invited to be present to the current circumstances, to current situations, and then based upon the principles of prior leadership strategies, figure out how do we apply it in this current situation and this very complex world that we're moving forward to in the future.
Yeah, I love that parent analogy too. I, as someone who grew up in Ghana, my kids were born here. I'm gonna get vulnerable here a little bit, but I have had to challenge some of those mindsets because, you know, growing up, I was raised very differently in a different culture, where there was a lot of subservience. You know, you call people by Mr. their last names, you put your hands behind. It's that was appropriate for the culture. Here is entirely different, right? It's not good. It's not bad. It's just different. So I have had to. I run into some challenges. You know, raising my kids or a thing that I'll say. You know, they'll ask why, and I will tell them. You know, growing up, when your parent tells you something, you don't ask why. You just do it. But I realized that the why was not for them to be disrespectful. They want to understand. I mean, they're, you know, this critical thinking skills that are being taught, and so they're seeking to understand why. So I had to adopt my own parenting styles from what I knew or from what I was used to growing up, right? It's the fact that it worked for me back, you know, 30, 40 years ago does not work in this current environment with my kids who had no understanding what that culture was, right? So I think challenging some of those mindsets, I could have held my guns and said, no, this is how we do it. And I've seen people who've done it, and it's brought a lot of you know, just it's broken families, right? Because they're used to doing things that way. But I think that kind of fits dovetails very beautifully into what you're saying. There was this story which you may be familiar with about this general, and happened in an army base. I'm not sure whether it's a fable or a true story, but they were constructing this plot of concrete platform in this military base, And the first time they did it, some animals walked on that wet cement and left their footprints on it. They had to reconstruct it. The following day, the animals had gone back and stepped on it and left footprints on it. So they reconstructed it, and this general this time ordered four generals to guard this platform 24/7. And so it was under this leadership of this general that he instituted. They had four generals guarding this slab of concrete 24/7. And so this general died, and a new general came in and enforced, this new rule, just continue guarding this. And so another general came up and said, "Why are you doing this?" And said, "Well," this general said, "Well, I mean, that's how the previous general did it. So I came over, I took over, and I enforced the rule." So they had to unpack that and realized that it was because animals were stepping on this slab of concrete and making it work. That's why they had to have generals guard this, but it was only supposed to be for a limited amount of time. This concrete platform had since dried up, but then they still had those generals guarding it because that's how things had been done. And I wonder how many of these, how much of this, impacts what we know now. We're doing something because a previous, leader or ancestors or systems or whatever, that's how it used to be done. So we're following that routine without challenging it and asking the why questions. And I wonder how much money we're wasting, resources we're throwing to antiquated systems and ways of thinking just because that's how it used to be done. Realizing that, well, that was appropriate for that time, but for today's day and age, things have changed, right? So we've got to be able to challenge those that status quo and look at what fits within the current environment. What's your response to that? I know that was quite
Oh,
long
yeah.
there, but
Wonderful, wonderful story. I love that story. And there's a similar story about this family at Thanksgiving that's cooking Thanksgiving dinner, and the wife cuts the turkey in half, and cooks it. And the guy's like, "Well, why are you cutting the turkey in half?" That's, "Well, that's what my mama, taught me." So, and the mama comes over and it's like, "Hey, mom, why you cut the turkey in half?" "Well, my grandma cut the turkey in half." And grandma comes in, and "Grandma, why do you cut the turkey in half?" "Well, because I had a small stove. It's the only way I could fit it in, the stove." And so it goes to the point that nothing feels like success. People keep doing the thing that they've always done in the past. However, the nature of leadership is to challenge the status quo. Leaders are the people who stand up and say, "You know what? There's a different direction. There are more options. There's another way for us to be able to do this. There's more ways to add value to our own life, to our own family, right? To our communities." And it's very hard to be an extraordinary leader, right? Because John Maxwell preaches that everyone's a leadership is a leader because everyone has influence, right? And that's true. And I like to make the distinction between leaders and extraordinary leaders, because I believe extraordinary leaders are the ones who are growing, who are taking their talent and skills and abilities and doing it in a way that it adds value to the lives of others. And they are challenging the status quo. And if you're not, then maybe you're just a leader, right? Or, people benefit from the status quo. And so you go from being a leader and you may become a bad leader. We all can agree that Nazi Germany, right? That Hitler was a leader. He influenced people. He challenged the status quo, but he used that power, right, for the detriment of other people. And you and I are in the business, right? We are investing our time and resources. We're not going to create the next rocket. We're not going to create the new next iPhone. But we are creating the next generation of leaders, who are going to change this world for the good and create a better place for you and I, your kids and my kids, right? So that they can be able to reach their full potential and add value to the world. So challenging the status quo, I think, is an important part of leadership.
I love that. I love that so much, Dayton. I think it brings to mind, we're talking about these fables, but if we bring it back to the real business world, we have companies like, I think it was Motorola, Blockbuster, and Kodak, right? Which at the time were doing well. They were capturing the market, Everything looked great. And so there was really no motivation for them to change when, they were challenged with, going digital and changing their business model. And I think it's the argument can be made that if it's not broken, don't fix it. Rather, the vernacular says, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And so we're stuck in this, let's not rock the boat. Things are going well. Why change? Why innovate? Why invest in that technology? Why spend the money on training leaders? Things are fine the way they are. It's change management 101. Let's not change it. But then we realize that sooner rather than later, change comes in when we least expect them. And where we think we were doing great, or the companies that were once doing great, commanding the market share, they're no more. They've been replaced, by the likes of Netflix and all these other, digital platforms. It's easy to change when we can see, the danger approaching. But when we don't see it and things look gravy and everything else look good, it's safe, to say, well, let's not change. How important is that, D2? Talking about that, that status quo. How then do we get ahead of, do we get ahead and change before we're forced to?
That's a great question. And so that leads me down the path to habit two of the seven habits, which is begin with the end in mind. And so part of leadership is about the future. We were talking about my recruiting trip, and as I go out and recruit people from government agency that I'm responsible for, I'm not hiring people based upon the prior year's mission, right? I'm not hiring people for the current mission. I'm hiring people for the future mission. That, we are not going to need certain skill sets. Could you imagine in 2000 that all of a sudden that we were hiring people that were really good at the typewriter? You went out and say, oh, how fast can you type on the typewriter? We went out and hired, people, and like, how can you use that this little piece of paper transparency and churn it around and around to make copies? In 2000, would we hire somebody for that? No, right? Because in 2000, we're using computers then. We have copiers, right? We want to use Excel. We want to use different types of things. So you hire, people with the skill sets of what's going to be needed in the future. That's the same thing for leaders. We don't hire leaders or appoint someone to be in charge, or we do not become parents, right, to raise kids to deal with the past. We create them and we develop them and we curate them for the future. And so if we have that mindset in mind, then a leader is looking out saying, well, what do I need to do to add value 3 years from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now? And then if I can see that future, then I start aligning my resources to do that. And, and when we fail to do that, when people live in the moment, that's when you can tell a junior leader, right? A leader that is just okay because they're stuck in the moment. Right, they're stuck doing what the status quo is, and then they miss the boat. Right, they miss the opportunity that is right in front of them. And you mentioned some of the companies that were so stuck in the existing way of doing business that they missed a foregoing opportunity. And some of the opportunities were not only put in their face, it was smacked in the face. Right? So when we think about companies like Blockbuster, they presented Blockbuster to the board and they said, you know what? We are not going to move forward on this because we make the majority of our money from late fees. In their mind, they couldn't imagine another way to create revenue from like streaming. Right? So what? There's no Blockbuster. When we think about BlackBerry, the concept and idea is like, you know what? We got this quirky keyboard. I mean, you were not a business professional if you did not have a BlackBerry. That was a sign of status. I'm going to bring out my BlackBerry to the point they called it a crackberry,
I had one of
right?
those.
Yes. But they would not let go of the QWERTY keyboard. They had the dominant position. And here comes iPhone. They come with the, you know, touch screen, the whole nine. You know, eventually they come out with something, but the opportunity was beyond them. You mentioned Kodak. You know, here Kodak creates and has the pattern for a digital camera. A digital camera. They own the patent. They created it. But they're like, no, we're making so much money from the development of film that they are going to let their patent run out. And other people took their pattern and ended up. And we got these digital phones, digital cameras, and they end up going bankrupt.
Yeah.
Like, how does that happen? Something you created and you end up going bankrupt.
That is so sad to think about it. I mean, it really is. I mean, I'll point you that. And that's why this topic of leadership or developing leadership or adding value, that's why this is so personal to me, D2. That's why I'm so passionate about this. Switching gears a little bit, the people aspect. You put a quote out there on LinkedIn, and this is what you said, and I quote, "The greatest leader is not necessarily the one who does the greatest things. He's the one that gets people to do the greatest things." And I love this quote so much because oftentimes we see leadership as in isolation, right? This is all about me. But we forget, I'm not sure whether this was attributable to John Maxwell or not, but it says if you're leading folks and you look behind and there's no one behind you, you're taking a walk. You're just taking a walk. There's no one following. But let's talk about the people aspect and why it's important to involve people when it comes to leadership.
Great question. So you know, when I think about that, we want to think about what we said what leadership was, right? Is that leadership is influence. Influence who? People. Because when we influence people, we create more opportunity for solutions, right? And so we're trying to solve a problem. We're trying to add value. We're trying to do something, right? And you grow and you influence grows by the more people you have influence over. And society, you know, ends up dictating that. When we think about the most powerful people, you know, in the world, you can almost rate it by how much influence that they have. You get paid more by the more influence you have. You know, you get more accoutrements by the more people. The more problems you solve for more people, right? The more people you solve, the more wealth you end up, you know, getting. So it's not about, so leadership is about getting things done through other people. Because when you get things done through other people, it has an exponential effect. Because I myself can do one thing. But now when I get involved with you, I can connect to, you know, more people. So now I can change people in my neighborhood, right? And if I get together with the people in my neighborhood, my people in my neighborhood, we can change our city.
That's right.
The people in our city can change our country, right? Change our state, change our country. We end up changing the world. So it's the exponential, you know, power of leadership. And so when people think, it's paradoxical, because I do believe in the power of one, right? That one person can make a difference in the life of someone, and to make lasting, impactful change of a national, of a regional, national, and world level, you need more people. One is too small of a number to do great things. And if you look at any great leader, they've never done it by itself. Jesus had disciples, right? You know, Dr. Martin Luther King had the SELC, right? He had the Southern Leadership Conference and other leaders, right? The President of the United States has Congress, right? Has a whole thing. CEOs that run and develop. Things can start off as one company. And next thing you know, the company has so many people to be able to add value. So leadership is about It's about the people. And when you involve the people and you get people to unleash their talent, skills, and ability, your impact becomes exponential. But leaders often create their own lid because in their mind, they believe, you know what? The only way for me to get this done is for me to get it done myself. Right? The only way to get this done is I gotta tell people everything that they have to do, and I have to micromanage them, every aspect of what they do versus unleashing their potential. That's why I want to recommend this book. It's called The Leadership Pipeline. It's one of this book focuses on how to be a leader at all levels of an organization. And the authors, this was very popularized by General Electric, and they use this as part of their leadership development program because in that book, they talked about, you know, hey, you start off on the first level as just leading yourself. Like, if you are not effective at personal leadership, eventually down the road, failure in this area would overcome you. I just talked about Tiger, right? Tiger Woods, greatest golfer in the world, right? He was on a path, 18 majors, but what brought him down? It was his personal life. It's how did he manage the relationships, you know, personally with his spouse, with these other folks? So the foundation for extraordinary leadership is managing yourself. And then you move up, right? Now you move up to, hey, I'm a frontline supervisor. That means you got some group of people that you report to. Now you're going to change your mindset to say, hey, I'm not getting things done through my own power. I'm getting things done through our collective power. And how do I influence those people that I'm working with? And then, you know, and this is, Fred, this is the part that often throws people off because individual performers often get promoted, right? Because they're great individual contributors. You know, you're doing well. Fred's knocking it out the park. He's getting done. But Fred only has to manage his own workload. You don't have to manage the relationships with other folks, what other people's capability is. It's like, no, I sit down. I got my workload. All I got to do is get that done. As long as I show up every day, I'm good to go. But when, and what we do is we promote that person. And that person brings to that mindset, I'm going to do the same thing. But you're not going to be effective that way because you're hired at that point to get things done through other people. And you have to tap in to the unique skills and abilities of the other people on the team. And then the next level up is when you become a manager of managers, right? So now you have managers reporting, you know, to you. And you're responsible for making sure those managers are effectively managing the people that report to them. And then the next scale, you become like a division chief, a business manager, a business leader, CEO of companies, and so forth. And at each one of those levels, your mindset changes about how you get things done and how you accomplish them. And the challenges become more complex, and there's more layers to a person's leadership skill and ability. And so when we talk about people and leadership, they go hand in hand because you're not going to be an extraordinary leader if you don't know how to influence people in a way that adds value to them and adds value to the organization so that you can have exponential results.
And the quote by that quote, we rise by lifting others, right? But man, we could
Right.
go on and on and on, Nito. But one of the things you said in this that resonated with me so much is that how the personal life or that person, the personal choice we make impacts us. And man, we could name names of, you know, people who we have made, you know, headlines over the years, icons whose personal or poor decision they made, right? Just brought them down. I think it's I love the quote by Daniel Goleman, the author of Emotional Intelligence, that says that CEOs or leaders, I might add, are hired because of their IQ or their intelligence, but they're fired by their lack of emotional intelligence. And I think it brings to bear the importance of the personal choices and how we self-govern our lives and the impacts that it has on our leadership. Thank you so much again, Dieter, for coming, and to you, our listeners, for hopping on. Until we come your way again with another edition, this has been Fred. Thank you, and stay safe.